Well, good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Buell Planetarium, and more importantly, welcome to SciTech Days here at Carnegie Science Center. The name of the presentation today, a personal robot for a better quality of life. A unique aspect of the Quality of Life Technology Center is its strength in all the relevant disciplines, which includes robotics, rehabilitation science, human-computer interaction, geriatrics, social sciences, and healthcare policy. Through their people, the Quality of Life Technology Center is connected to some of the world's leading health systems and technological clinical research facilities. People design robots to make our lives better, often in unique ways. Your presenter, Anka Dragan, is a doctorate student at Carnegie Mellon's Robotics Institute and a member of the Personal Robotics Lab. Her research lies at the intersection of robotics, machine learning, and human-computer interaction. Please welcome Anka Dragan.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. Thanks a lot for coming. It's a pleasure to be here. Can everyone hear me all right? Yeah? Good. So before I start, I wanted to get a sense of where you guys come from, and in particular, what your background is. If you don't mind, show of hands, who's in high school? Okay, we have a few people in high school. What about 5th through 8th grade? Okay, all right, so, okay. And that's just to get an idea of the depth of the material we're gonna cover. Throughout all of this is meant to be very interactive, so throughout all of this, if you have a question, just raise your hand and try to speak very loudly so that I can hear you through here. I have a mic and you don't, so it's a little bit unfair. Okay, so, my name is Anka Dragan. Everyone in the U.S. calls me Anka Dragan. I'm from the Robotics Institute at Carnegie Mellon. I'm getting my doctoral degree in robotics, as you've heard before. But I'm here to represent the Quality of Life Technology Center, which is a center within Carnegie Mellon and actually in collaboration with University of Pittsburgh. And the idea with the Quality of Life Technology Center, as the name suggests, well, we're all about designing technology that improves people's lives. And in particular, we're focusing on two populations. So it's about improving everyone's quality of life, but in particular, two populations, people with disabilities here, and older adults. Now, I was gonna ask you, why do you think we focus on these populations? And I figured I'd start by having a little interactive question for you. So it turns out, you guys, the question's gonna pop up there. Let me blind this. Isn't that cool? So now you guys have on your seats, if you look at the right handle, these colored buttons, right? And what I'd like you to do, well, everyone is already doing it, so you guys are really smart tech kids now, so don't have to explain this. But yes, go and vote. What do you think? The yellow button is the one in the middle. The red button is where? On the left.
Yeah, they're colors.
All right. So we're talking about, if you look at everyone in the United States, look at their age and take the average for everyone. What is that number doing over the years in recent times? Yes, you have a question? You think it's increasing. Well, there's a bunch of people also say decreasing. Who voted decreasing? You voted. Why do you think it's decreasing?
Me?
Yeah.
Because I think that there are more children being born than there are getting older. So then, in general,
it's lower. Right. Okay, so that's a good argument. If our birth rate would be increasing, then we'd expect that the average age would be decreasing. That's right. Well, the correct answer turns out to be that the average age is actually increasing. So your argument was really good, but yeah, everyone said increasing, got it right. It was 68 versus 33. And what does this mean? It means that we have more older adults. And what we do with the Quality of Life Technology Center is we try to develop technologies that help these people live more independently, ideally in their homes, so that they don't have to go to nursing centers and facilities like that. So they can stay in their homes and sort of take care of themselves with the aid of this technology. All right, so we can pop that question out. We're done with that. And I figured I'd talk a little bit about what I mean by technologies that help older adults and people with disabilities. And here's a few examples from the Quality of Life Technology Center. Here on the top left, you have a robot called Perma. And Perma is basically a wheelchair, but it's a special wheelchair because it has these two arms that are connected to it. And the idea is for someone with a disability who has to be in a wheelchair and who can't move their arms very much, or have lost some of the motor abilities, they could still perhaps control something like, you all play games, right? Everyone plays games? Yeah, so you have game controllers, joysticks, things like that. So the idea here is that perhaps people can use these kind of devices, they still have enough motor control to use these kind of devices, and then they control those arms to go and do things in the world for them, like pick up a glass of water and bring it to their face to drink, right? So the idea here is perhaps they can't do that anymore by using their own arms, but they have this robot that acts sort of like an avatar for them in the world. Now, this guy here, this is what we call a soft robot. Can anyone think of why, or I say, you know, this guy is made of metal. I don't know what it looks like to you, it might be plastic, but it's actually made of metal. So can anyone of you think of why we would, yeah, why do we want soft robots? You over there. Some people are delicate. I think, anyone else? Yeah. Right, then they won't hurt themselves. That's true. How about you? So perhaps, right, so perhaps you can get new ways of grasping things. Yeah, one more. Right, exactly. We want soft robots to interact with delicate things, and as someone pointed out, humans tend to be quite delicate. We don't want to be hit by metal, right? And so the idea with soft robots is, for these robots, you know, this is an example where the robot is trying to kind of wash a person, in this case a mannequin, right? You wouldn't necessarily want a metal robot, and perhaps because you might, as someone suggested, you might have sudden movements, sudden twitches, and you might hurt yourself, but the robot itself might not exactly perceive where you are, how your body looks like, and it might accidentally hurt you without meaning to, right? So that's the idea with soft robots. Let's take this guy here. This is not quite a robot, but it's a piece of technology. The way it works is it's kind of like glasses, and you wear them, and if you're blind, there's a camera there who sees the world and who recognizes objects in front of you and can tell you what's out there when you can't see it yourself. Moving on, this is a robot that is kind of different. It's not for older adults, it's not for people with disabilities like these other ones were. This here is a robot that is supposed to interact with children, and in particular children that suffer from autism, that you know, have trouble perceiving social cues and so on. So there's not just the Quality of Life Technology Center, but in other places as well, people are working towards developing kind of simple robots that exhibit simple emotions that can soothe kids with autism and sort of interact with them and teach them normal interactions. And speaking of interaction, this robot right here, his name is Snackbot. I think he'll like the robot just most because what it does is it comes around our offices and it delivers snacks. We can order snacks online, and this robot just comes and brings them to us. Now, well, where our research interests lie with a robot like that is on this thing called human-robot interaction. And in particular, what we were looking at was, well, if I have a robot that comes and interacts with you by delivering you snacks, for example, is it important for you that this robot personalizes what it says to you to kind of the things that happened in the past between the two of you? So, for example, we were looking at, well, what if the robot notices that you really like bananas and includes that into the conversation as opposed to just making random chit-chat about the soccer game, right? So there's this aspect of customizing the interaction to each individual that we were exploring here. And this is one aspect of what you might want to look like when you look at how robots should be interacting with humans. And this is very similar to what we mentioned before, human-computer interaction, because robots are just fancy computers. They're computers that have a physical presence and can move about the world. Now, a few more examples. This is all about in the context of autonomous vehicles, or at least cars that assist you while you drive. This guy assists you while you park. This one trains you to drive better. And it's targeted at older adults that are maybe losing their ability to maybe stay focused, to drive as they would normally do when they were much younger. Now, another example is this idea of a virtual coach. So these are technologies are about monitoring the person. So in this case, someone was exercising, or in this case here, this is for stroke patients. So if someone had a stroke and now they're trying to rehabilitate, so they can't really use their arm as well as they could, and they're trying to go through these motions that are supposed to strengthen their muscles and get their dexterity back. In this sort of situation, the idea is that a camera would be looking at you, would be monitor how well you're doing the exercise, and give you advice on what to do next. And like what a physical therapist would do, well, you can do this in the convenience of your home and without needing to hire someone. So quality, I guess the bottom line is that quality of life technology is not just one thing. It's really about all of these different fields together, like robotics, you've seen a lot of robotics, autonomous vehicles, computer vision, rehab, therapy, machine learning, psychology, human-computer interaction, artificial intelligence, and I probably left out a lot of them. So in order to do quality of life technology, you know, most of us have a technical background, but then we'd go off and try to combine our technical background with another discipline and bring these disciplines together in order to create something that would be actually useful for these populations. And this brings me to my particular story. This is the robot that I've been working with for the past 4 years. I want to introduce you to Herb. Herb stands for the Home Exploring Robot Butler. So he's kind of like a butler. And he's also homage to Herb Simon, who's a famous computer scientist. And Herb and I, both of us, are part of the personal robotics lab at Carnegie Mellon. This is the whole lab. This is my advisor, Sid. He put the lab together. And the lab focuses on something, a type of research that we call manipulation research. And now, given that I told you what Herb's name stands for, and given the fact that you know that Herb is a personal robot, I'd like you to think about this next question here, which is, what do you think manipulation research is? Is it studying how a robot can best convince people to do what it wants? Is it studying how a robot can use its arms and hands to physically interact with objects in the world? Or is it studying how a robot can best move people's limbs around? All right, let's vote. It's really awkward for me to say, I'm going to come over here. Good. All right. So it's pretty clear. We have a really smart bunch here. The right answer is this one, studying how a robot can use its arms and hands to physically interact with objects in the environment. And here's an example of that. Here, Herb is interacting with one particular object. His favorite object is a fuse bottle. And the reason it's a fuse bottle is because he can detect it very well. Fuse bottles have a lot of texture on them. It makes it easy for robots to detect that kind of thing. So Herb, you know, back in the day, Herb would do a lot of this where he would go, he would pick an object up, and then maybe deliver it to someone or recycle it or something like that. So this would be one of, kind of a primary example of what we mean by manipulation, using your arms to physically change the environment. And we can get rid of that question over there, Herb. All right. And so this was all with a fuse bottle. I'm picking up a fuse bottle. And now, after we've done that, we also started looking into, well, can we do more complex manipulation tasks, like perhaps operating appliances? And here, you see Herb taking a frozen, one of these frozen dinners. He can cook better than me. I kind of, you know, he has surpassed my cooking abilities with this microwave of frozen dinner kind of thing. So here Herbis is operating the microwave, the buttons, and closing the door, and so on. And all of these are examples of manipulation tasks that go beyond just grabbing an object. And then he is running to deliver that meal to someone. Okay, so this was all... this was all in the context of you saw these worlds that Herb was operating on, a table with one object on it, a countertop with one frozen meal on it. So then we started wondering, what if the world doesn't look as neat as Herb thinks it does? What if the world looks more like that? What if there's clutter, right? Like, if you were to compare this, how many of you think that your dining room table usually looks like this and not like that? So this, man, you have neat parents. They actually clean up the dining room table. My dining room table usually looks more like that. So here, we see her dealing with this aspect of there's multiple objects in front of it, and in order to reach for something, because you see it's kind of big and clunky, and in order to reach for something, it actually has to make space and clear things around, and only then is he able to get to the object that he was actually getting for. Okay, now moving forward, this was all in the context of her coming up with what to do on its own. So, and sometimes I'll say its own, sometimes I'll say his own, because I tend to think of, I've been working with this robot for 4 years, so I tend to anthropomorphize him a lot. So here, right, we were thinking of everything that you saw was her coming up with these plans on its own, autonomously. But there's also situations where her could be useful, not when, even if he can't come up with what to do on his own, but he has a person telling it what he should be doing. And this is an example here where I was moving and we had a motion capture like interface, and my motion was translated onto Herb. So Herb doesn't have to think here for his own, all he has to do is copy what I'm doing. But this could still be useful, for example, if you have a caregiver somewhere kind of logging in remotely into a robot and telling it here, do this now, do this other thing now. It could alleviate the burden on the robot's intelligence, the level of intelligence that the robot needs to have, by getting basically help from a person. Now, what I want you to think about for this next question, and there's no right answer here, I just want to hear your thoughts. If you had Herb, what would you want Herb to do? Look at that! Alright, we can stop. So it looks pretty even. It looks like a lot of people like big cats here. I would like a robot too, if not mine. Now, can anyone think of other things that weren't on this list that you would want a robot like her to do for you? Do your homework. You're gonna get into trouble here if your teachers are around. What else? Can you think of anything else? Yeah.
Massage you.
Yeah. You don't have to go to a massage therapy for that. Yeah. Do your homework. Man, everyone wants their homework done. You kids should like learn things on your own and not rely on robots to do it. But if you program the robot to do your homework for you, then I think you're okay. Then I think your teachers would be okay with that. Yeah, over there. Tutoring someone. Yeah, and there's actually, that's a great point. There's a lot of research going on, not just on the robots learning from people, kind of like the examples that I was showing you where I was telling Herb what to do and then you could think of Herb learns from me, but the other way around where Herb has some knowledge and it tutors someone. Yeah. Yeah, you.
I look for Herb to drive to the car and I have a copy of my motions
and I buy them. Okay. Yeah. Buy things, like go to the grocery store and just so that you don't have to.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, or you can order things, you know, online. Yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. The question was, Herb has wheels, why did he have to go upstairs? And it's true, it would be really hard. I mean, it would be impossible for Herb to go upstairs. He would have to take an elevator. And that's a big problem, and I want to comment a little bit on that, because I think it's a very insightful question. There was this idea of, well, should we have Herb have wheels, or should it have legs like we do? If it had legs, it could actually go upstairs. It could do whatever we want to do. But it turns out that getting the robot to balance like we do is very hard. Like, if you get the robot to balance on a flat surface like this, but when it comes to slightly uneven terrain, you have to compute how all the joints need to move and what torques to apply to everything in order for the robot to not fall over. And that turns to be a pretty complicated research problem. And that's why a lot of robots have wheels, because they're just stable that way and you don't have to deal with that problem. Yeah?
I would have to carry me around the house.
Carry you around the house? So, you know, I would think, well, maybe I'd have my grandma be carried around the house because she can't move very well, but you can walk around the house. So you see there's this potential risk here of if everyone got a personal robot, and if personal robots were good enough to do all of these things, would we get lazy? Have you ever all seen WALL-E? Who has it? I want to see WALL-E. Yay, so this is what happened in WALL-E, right? So we have to do certain things to make sure that our population, general population, doesn't get lazy and stop doing all these physical things just because they don't have to anymore. So that's something to think about when you're doing robotics. Yeah. Definitely. And you can probably have, so I gave the example of motion capture, but if the robot has some sort of intelligence, you can give it instructions at a higher level, like, I want you to reach here and get this. So maybe reach from the right or you reach from the left, but you wouldn't have to actually do the motion itself. So it depends kind of on how much intelligence the robot has, what things you can do and what interfaces you need. Yeah. You could. Actually, we do this a lot. So there's been a lot of instances among PhD students who are still taking classes, which happens in the first 1 or 2 years, where people are out for a conference or they're visiting home or something like that. So they're not even on this continent. And they still go to class, not with Herb in particular, but with a different kind of robot. You don't have to have arms to go to class. You can just watch. You have to have a camera that records what's going on. And you have to be able to move around so that you can, you know, be in class and come from class. But definitely, this is called telepresence. So there's a lot of telepresence robots out there. They're becoming really useful for this sort of thing. In offices as well, in office environments. Like, for example, if your dad has to miss work or he's sick and he's at home or something like that, then you could still go in by having this sort of avatar or telepresence self, and you still take participate in meetings and so on. Yes. It's not actually strong enough. That's very clever. But it would have to have a big payload on his arms. And his base is very, very heavy, so his arms can't actually push that much. You'd have to have a lot of strength. The arms would probably just break if it tries to do that. Yeah. Security. Yeah, but do you need Herb for security? I mean, I guess this brings us to this idea of a personal robot. You know, it's very interesting because we're talking about a robot that can do all of these things. And we have technologies that can do some of these things. Like, we have cameras that can track whether a burglar is coming into your house or something like that and alert the police. But the idea with a personal robot is that you have a robot that can take care of all these things for you, perhaps. Like, you don't have a bread maker and something that loads the dishes into the dishwasher and a robot that cooks, and you don't have all these robots around. You have one robot who can multitask and do all these things. Other thoughts? Yeah. Okay.
Like those
stairs that like, come down to the sit on. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, that's a great idea. You'd have to make them strong enough to be able to carry her, because Herb is pretty heavy, but that's definitely a way. Yeah. As, you know, Herb rides on a Segway. much like the Segways that you probably tried at some point. So everything that a Segway could go on or could go on, broadly, it has the caster wheels to like not fall over this way or that way. At some point, if you tilt enough, you know, his center of gravity is not quite like your center of gravity. So we try to make the center of gravity pretty low, but those arms are really heavy, so it pushes the center of gravity up and makes the balance a little bit trickier. Yeah. There are, yeah. There's definitely training offices nowadays as well. And it's pretty cool because you get to have a little bit more physical presence than with just a webcam on Skype. If you're on a screen, you know, you feel like you can't do much. And now people are attaching arms to these things so that you can point to things. So there's a lot of cool research there. Yeah. Can you say that a lot louder, please? Does her have a... Yes. So much like your phone, he has all these sensors. He also has fancier sensors, like he has this thing called a stargazer, but we'll get to that. Let me stop right there and get to that a bit later. Which is, what is HERB made of? So thank you for asking that question. What are the building blocks of a personal robot? So here are some building blocks. You know, HERB has wheels, he has these computers are right here. He has speakers here. And he has these arms, which are a big ticket item, right? Like, this is how he can actually go and alter the world. He has his hands, which go along with his arms. And then he has sensors. Can anyone think of the sensors that go on a personal robot, besides the gyroscope? Yeah. Mm-hmm. A touch sensor, exactly. Very good. So if you look at Herb's hands, he has these blue pads, and he has them on the fingers as well. And those are sensitive to pressure or touch. So that way you can see if he's pushing something, for example. And that's what enables him to pick up an egg, for example. Yeah. Ultrasound. That's an interesting sensor. He doesn't have ultrasound or a thermal camera. What would you do with a robot that had an ultrasound? Think about that for a second. Okay, what are sensors? Mm-hmm. Motion sensors, yeah, so very related to that. You know, the arms have sensors that know, kind of force sense external torques. And then on, you can't see it here, but kind of on his back, on his shoulder, there's a sensor called a stargazer. And what this does is it looks up, it sends infrared at the ceiling. And if we have these dots on ceilings throughout our building, actually. And they're kind of like constellations. They're kind of like in a planetarium with gerbils, like this is where this constellation is, that is where that constellation is. That's what HERB can do, and the reason it can do that is so that he can know where he is in a room relative to all these constellations, all these dots on the ceiling. Does that make sense? So now HERB knows, okay, I'm in the kitchen, and in particular, I'm by the table, or I'm in front of the microwave, and so on. Yeah.
When you tune wheels and legs, did you consider variable geometry treads that may help with stairs?
Yeah, so there's another robot being developed now as part of something called the DARPA Robotics Challenge. And it's being developed in an institution, part of the Robotics Institute, but not on campus. It's called the National Robotics Engineering Center. And there they have a robot called Chimp. I don't think I have a picture of Chimp, but the idea with Chimp is that he has these, he's kind of like, he has two arms and two legs, but his shins are kind of like a tank treadmill type of thing. Yeah, so he can actually go on rough terrain like that and doesn't have to balance, which is pretty cool. Yeah. A bunch of, right. Yeah, like if you had more, kind of that was the idea with Chimp, that you use your hands as support as well when you need to, and you go on all fours, you can have even more. JPL, the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, affiliated with NASA, they're developing this robot for the same competition, which is kind of like a spider. And you have to think of how big you want your robot to get. That's a concern. You know, we wanted HERB to, you can see HERB is pretty big. We wanted HERB to actually fit through a normal door. And that was kind of hard. That's why the arms are put like that. So you have to think about how big you want things to get. But that's definitely an option. Yeah.
So the ultrasonic sensor that someone else is talking about, I don't know, I heard about
that's a laser, a LIDAR scanner. And what he does with that is he sends laser beams. And when laser beams intersect things and come back, he knows, okay, there's a surface there. So he uses that to figure out where corners are and where walls are, and, you know, not run into walls, which is a really useful feature for a robot. Okay, so there's actually more things. There's, you know, obviously metal, battery, circuit boards, the whole electrical engineering side of things. There's a router so he can talk to us over the internet. He has a bow tie because he's a butler. And I guess what I want to get to is that there's these building blocks, which are physical building blocks, but there's also the intelligence building blocks that no one mentioned, right? So in order for a personal robot to exist in the world, he has to see, and we call this perception, he has to move around the room, and we call this navigation. He has to act in the world, and that's where manipulation comes in. And he has to be able to communicate and coordinate with people, and that's the interaction aspect. So with perception, here's her kind of looking at getting camera images. This is called computer vision, which is you look at the world through cameras, and then you try to recognize objects. One area of computer vision, you try to recognize objects that you know. So in this case, Herb is recognizing, I guess, what are these? Soup and apple juice boxes. So wherever you put a soup and an apple juice box, Herb will find it. That's the idea here. Moving on, there's navigation. And here's an example. This is, by the way, how Herb used to look like back in 2009, I'd say. And Herb is going here, and he wanted to go this way, and then he sees Garrett, a former co-worker of ours, coming around, and he predicts that Garrett will go this way, so he changes his path around to not get in the way of the person. So that's kind of part of this area of navigation. How do I move around without hitting things and without disturbing people? And then there's, you know, our favorite manipulation, acting in the world, and I've already shown you examples of, we've already seen examples of her manipulating objects, and here is some more manipulation and clutter. And finally, there's communication. And you can think of communication either in a shared workspace where I'm working with the robot on a collaborative task. But you can also think of communication in the way we were looking at before, where I'm commanding the robot to do things. And what's going on in this video is that the robot is trying to infer what it is that I want to do. In this case, I want to go for this bottle or this box. And then he's using his intelligence that he already has to help me achieve the task. So there's a lot of coordination going on there where he predicts what I want to do and then he figures out how to help me actually do it. And if you think this is easy, I want to remind you of Clippy. You might be too young now that I realize. Who knows Clippy? The Microsoft. Ah, perfect. Thank you. I haven't gotten that old yet. So Clippy was this Microsoft Office assistant, and you know, I'm not gonna lie to you, he's kind of annoying. Do you agree that he's kind of annoying? Everyone has this feeling that Clippy wasn't the best kind of assistant, and it's perhaps because Clippy was always trying to, you always want to write a letter, you always need help with it, and so Clippy shows us that the way a robot should assist us in doing a task is a little bit complicated, and we need to put a little bit of thought into how much assistance people want and where and when they want it. For example, you know, we do these user studies, and so we have users come and operate the robot, the robot is trying to help them, and we see how they feel about different ways in which the robot is assisting them. And what we realize, for example, is, well, if you have a very easy task, if the person feels like, okay, you know, I'm writing the letter, I know how to do this, or I'm picking this up using the robot, I know how to do this, then they don't really want your assistance at all. They feel like you're getting in the way, they feel like you're taking control away from them that they want, whereas if the task is harder, that's when they really appreciate the robot in the room. Okay, and now this leads me to this next question. What do you think is more difficult, designing the hardware for her or designing the intelligence for her? Yeah. All right, so you saw that right there. You guys definitely got it right. The hardware is complicated, I'm not gonna lie, but it's really getting Herb to do all these tasks reliably and figure out how to coordinate with the person that is really good. Now, let's talk a little bit about why this is difficult. And I've taken this challenge upon myself to try to explain to you this, because I don't know if we in robotics have that great of an understanding of this ourselves. But here's why this is difficult. Back when you weren't born yet, and I wasn't born yet actually, there was this big chess competition between a robot or a computer system developed by IBM, Deep Blue, and Garry Kasparov, who was the worldwide chess master. And this was back when, you might not believe it, computers hadn't beaten a master at chess yet. Computers weren't that good at chess. And this was the first computer to actually beat the current world master. And so this was a point in artificial intelligence where people thought, okay, artificial intelligence is solved. If we can play chess better than the best person on Earth, we are as intelligent or even more intelligent than people. And it turns out that wasn't quite right, because IBM Deep Blue, sitting here, you see this is not a robot, this is a person. And the reason the person is there, can anyone think of why the person is there? Well, it's already written on the slide. It's because the person was able to move the chess pieces, but the robot could not. So the manipulation aspect, even though the robot could figure out how to play chess much better than a person, it was very, very hard to actually physically interact with the world, which is something that humans are so innately good at. I mean, we learn a lot during our first year, but after a year or two, our manipulation skills far, far exceed anything we could do with robots nowadays. Did you have a question? Okay. So I wanted to go into a little bit more detail on this issue of why coming up with the intelligence is so difficult. And I decided to focus on my own research topic and take you a little bit through that story on creating motion for her, right? So how can her autonomously plan how it should move his arms in order to achieve the tasks we want him to achieve? And when you do research on a particular topic, you first look at the state of the art. So I wanted to show you the state of the art on how Herb would go to pick up a bottle. And now I want you to spend just a little bit of time imagining in your head how you think the right arm will move as it's reaching for the bottle. Just try to visualize that video in your head before I actually play. Okay? And now compare it to this. This is what Herb would actually do. It is probably not what you would normally expect a robot to do. And so when I saw this, I went in and thought very deeply about why does the motion look like that? Why doesn't it look more normal? Yeah, you had a question? Why what? Right, exactly. So I was getting to that. Good question. That's the question I asked myself as well. Well, why does the hand cross, why does it do all these unnecessary things? And the realization I came to is that when we were planning the robot's motion, or creating these algorithms to come up with how Herb should move, what we were really doing is we were focusing on motion from this very functional perspective, where the purpose of the motion was for the robot to reach its goal and to avoid colliding with things. And that video that you saw did a great job at that, right? It didn't collide with things, it didn't hit the table, it didn't do anything, and it actually reached that bottle. So from a functional perspective, Herb was doing a great task. And even a functional perspective, even planning such motion, any motion, motion that, you know, spins too much and goes around too much and looks weird, even just coming up with any motion that just does not hit things and reaches the goal is really hard. And I'm going to try to explain why it's really hard. Here's the deal. If you look at this is not quite, I expected this to be flat, but I guess it's a planetarium, so it's not going to be flat. Imagine a flat screen. There's really two dimensions in a flat screen, right? There's the x-axis and the y-axis. Now, Herb does not, you can't put Herb on a screen. He lives in this three-dimensional world, right? X, Y, Z, right? Yes, he has a physical presence. But the problem is that when we search for motion, we don't search even through this three-dimensional space. We actually search through what we found for the right arm through a seven-dimensional space. And that's really, really hard to picture. The reason is because if you think of Herb's arm, he has 3 degrees of freedom in the shoulder, one in the elbow, and then 3 more in the wrist, much like our arms do. And so he has to figure out how to coordinate all these 7 degrees of freedom and move them through space. And I can't draw seven-dimensional space on a board, but you can sort of think about it as this. You know, you need 2 dimensions means 2 axes, 3 dimensions means you have 3 numbers and you have 3 axes. 7 dimensions, these would be your axes. I can't draw them, but that's kind of the space. It's very hard for us humans to visualize this kind of thing. But it's a huge, huge expansive space. And it's really hard to search for that space, and that's why motion is really hard to do. And so Herb kind of searches through that space and comes up, there are 20 different trajectories, motion trajectories, to do the same thing, to reach for that bottle, right? And what they all have in common is that, well, functionally they're the same. They all reach the goal and they all avoid hitting stuff in the world, right? And Herb would just come up with the first one and go with that one. And that's why his motion looks like that. It's because he's doing his best to search through the space, and when he finds something, he says, okay, success, I found something. And so this is, this works well, in that he actually gets his job done. But then I started thinking of, well, Herb is a personal robot. And personal robots are supposed to help people, right? That's what Quality of Life Technology Center is about. And if the robot moves, this is a functional motion. This is going to be even more ridiculous, just to warn you. This is a functional motion. It doesn't hit things. It eventually reaches a goal, but it's not exactly what I would want her to execute when I'm actually working with, right? Would you feel comfortable around this robot? No. Exactly. We want people to be comfortable. How much time do we still have left, by the way? Can anyone tell me? Are we finishing at 12?
Well, actually, we'd be before that, so.
Okay,
we'll
so
have
we should
presentation.
Wrap up. I want to give you this question first before I move into how we actually solve the problem. Question up? When it comes to fixing Herb's motion and making Herb move in a way that you would be comfortable around him, what subject do you think is the most useful? All right, let's stop it right there. So you guys think physics, eh? Well, I have a surprise for you. It's math. You have to think about this like big dimensional space. And actually, the way we do it is we say, well, there's many functional trajectories. Some of them are better than others. Some of them would make the person more comfortable than others. So we got to go from just thinking of trajectories in terms of heat, feasible, not heated things, to trajectories, motions that are optimal. You know, we want to get to those things that are better. And so here comes the math. Because now, so think about you've seen something probably in math like f of x equals x plus 2, right?
Yeah.
So this is kind of how we specify to the robot, look, this motion would be better than another motion. We have motions, and we assign them a value that says this is how good they are. Like f of x equals x plus 2, but a little bit more complicated because x is a full motion trajectory, and the actual function depends on, how efficient the trajectory is and so on. And then we go ahead and try to find the best trajectory. And you could do this by sort of taking points along the axis, taking different motions and saying, well, how good are they? And then pick the best one. But then you have a pretty hard time coming up with this guy, the best motion. And so instead what we do is we actually use the function itself and try to go off the function using the local information from around the point that we sampled and get all the way up. And this is a much more direct approach. And so here's the last question for today. How many of you know this? This is a little bit tricky, so don't feel bad if you haven't learned it yet. All right, let's stop it right here. So we usually take the derivative of the function, and the derivative of the function gives us this information about which way to go such that the function increases, and that's what was going on here. We look at this, we take the derivative, and the derivative says go this way, and then the function increases that way. All right, So here's Herb actually executing the sort of trajectory and producing motion that is optimal. And, you know, as research goes on, we realize that ophthalmology is not enough. And I won't have time to go into this, but here's an optimal motion, and what I want you to do is figure out which one of these two bottle curves is going to be left. Ready? Let me stop right here. Okay, let's do one more. Which one? Can we pull on this?
Yeah.
The bottle on the robot's right, so this one, or the bottle on the robot's left, so this one. Okay, let's top it up. So it's pretty evenly split. I mean, this one is a little bit higher, but yeah, the right answer is the bottle on. No, it's on the robot's right. I got that wrong. It was actually bottle on the robot's right. So you know, you get. And I'll skip all these slides, but the idea is, and I'll show you this funny video. The idea is. Here, her was trying to separate the cookie from the cream in an Oreo. She was featured in this advertisement. All right. So the idea is, as you go through a research problem, you start with something, you identify what the state of the art is, you try to fix it, and you do better, but that's not usually the end of the story. Then you find other issues that you want to attack, like the fact that you can't tell what the robot is about to do, and that's important in a collaboration. And then you move on with that and take that on, and that's sort of where we're at now. So with that, let's end here. Do you have any questions? Can we take like two quick questions? Do you have any questions? If not, I'll kind of feed my way through and see if I have any slides all the way at the end that would be useful for you to see. I'll end with this, which is, you know, go and do really cool things on robots. These are things in Robotics Institute. Yeah. What is the smallest robot and most efficient? And that's a very hard question to answer because, you see, there are robots out there that are on the nanoscale that are supposed to go through and do surgery on you, that are supposed to, you know, do some sort of form optimization. They're robots the size of bees. How small do they get? Well, you can get the arms to be a little bit thinner, for example. And that helps them. Like you saw the Forma arms at the beginning, those are a little bit thinner. They can't carry as much and they're not as precise. So you always have that trade-off. And if you had legs, then you could also narrow things down, but then you have the problem of how do you actually balance. So there's these trade-offs. You know, you and Herb is somewhere in the middle, I guess. Yeah. Anything else? All right, well, it was a pleasure talking to you today. Thanks so much for coming.